On this episode of The Playbook, I have Trevor Moad, the co-founder with Russell Wilson and CEO of Limitless Minds. And we're going to talk about the importance of a positive mindset as it relates to business and sports and the best piece of advice Russell Wilson has ever given about being neutral. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have an Occidental alumnus, that's my school, so that's why I'm bringing it up, Trevor Moad, who is partnered with the Russell Wilson in Limitless Minds, and also, of course, the CEO and founder of Moad Consulting. Is that correct?
Yes. Perfect. Fantastic. Thanks, Dave.
I want to start somewhere because people think there's only these traditional jobs in sports.
Yes.
And somehow both of us went to this Division III school that let us play sports.
Yes.
You basketball and soccer.
Yep.
I'm a tremendous football player, as you can tell. And but yet we found our way into these jobs.
Yeah.
Professions that so many, like everyone in the world would want to partner with Russell Wilson or Warren Moon.
Right.
I mean, honestly.
That's true. That's an interesting way to look at it.
And I wanted to be a professional athlete, just didn't have the skills. How did you maneuver yourself with the skills that you learned at Oxy and in graduate school to really facilitate your first job in sports, that entry point into sports?
Well, I think the idea of being at good, challenging schools. You know, when I was in Seattle, I went to a really good private school, Charles Wright Academy, where I was always over-indexed by people that were brighter and more intelligent. And it would definitely be the same at Oxy when you go all those kids from Phillips Academy and all the, you know, all the schools, Sidwell Friends and all those places. So number one, I was constantly stretched academically in the environments that I was in. I think when I went to Occidental, the ability... What I loved about Oxy was it gave me a really well-rounded. So I did theater, music. I was in the Greek system, government, as well as multiple sports. So it just gave me a really well-rounded approach. But I took my sports really seriously. So when I graduated from Oxy, I actually wanted to keep playing soccer. So I tried to continue with the professional soccer and also be a high school teacher. So I was a teacher in LA Unified School District, and that would, the decision to become, to go into education, to get my master's degree and play another year where I had eligibility, which is kind of a weird decision, Division III, right?
Right, yeah. So but people made it all the time.
Right, but Coach Weedoff really helped me get a graduate assistant scholarship so I could stay another year and do the education program. And so that decision would get me into teaching. After teaching a couple of years, Major League Soccer had launched and all of that was going on. My roommate at the time got traded to the Miami Fusion. My significant other, we were hiking up in Angels Crest in Pasadena and got chased by like some gang ritual. And we were both kind of like, we're ready to get out of LA.
Yeah.
And you know, Los Angeles is phenomenal if you have money. But if you don't, it's...
like Manhattan.
Right. It's tough. So that teaching moment, I would end up going to Florida to teach and coach, and 2 years of teaching and coaching, I went to a clinic at the Nick Bollettieri IMG Academy. Well, I'm coaching men's and women's soccer and men's and women's golf, and I really had no right. I feel bad for those that I coached golf for. but that brought me to a clinic for the Florida Athletic Coaches Association, and you know, I had been raised uniquely. My father was a very successful motivational speaker and educator and one of the original contributors to Chicken Soup for the Soul. And so I had this, but he was more in the business world. So I had this education in my mind, and then I was sort of an athlete in school, well-rounded, and then I was teaching. But when I went to that first clinic in Bradenton, Florida, and I saw Mark Verstegen, the great trainer who would found Athletes Performance and Exos train, and then I heard Jeff Trost, the director of sports psychology for Nick Bollettieri, I was like, that's it. So I have the athletic background, but I see this job that I didn't even know existed.
Right.
Okay. So this is 2000. So I write Jeff a bunch of letters. I introduce myself. He knew my father, but I didn't need an internship. I was already working. So they gave me one. I slept on the floor with the tennis coach, went there in the summer. First week, got offered a job, probably just like you, Dave, in the sense that I was like, okay, how do I get a job here? So there were 8 interns in the sports psychology department. They were all there to get educated. I was there to get a job. So I realized they had these $350 packages, and if I could learn how to sell them, and you had to make calls each week to prospective people coming in. So I made 150 calls, sold 20 packages, got offered a job at the end of the first week. And that's how I found my way in this weird mental conditioning, sports psychology world from education. I'd never taken a sports psychology class. $28,000 a year, that was my step.
It's amazing because both of us have this unique perspective of, okay, I see things differently. And when I'm listening to the story, it's like, okay, so I move here to do this, and there is a lack of traditional fear of I'm supposed to do this.
Yes.
And I grew up in a household where it's doctor, lawyer, failure.
Yeah.
In fact, it fit right into Occidental, right? The king of feeders to graduate schools.
Right.
You know, nobody's going to know your college, but every graduate school knows Occidental.
No question.
And respected it.
Yes.
Right? But if I was going
into
business.
And we were talking about how freaking hard it was.
Yeah.
Thank God for President Obama, because at least people know the school.
Right, yeah. In a couple now others, right?
I
think Ben Affleck was there for a couple of years, or Jim Mora, Jack Kemp.
Yeah, I caught Ben. So Ben was coming out when I was coming in. So you'd see Ben filming scenes, and he was dating a girl that I was in this musical group with. So great guy, Matt and Casey Affleck, all those guys were down there. They were all really good guys.
Yeah, it was a unique place. But
somehow
a lot of people that went to that school, or in general, you see things differently. And I tell people all the time, they'll say to me, how do you become a sports agent? I said, should I go to law school? I said, let's just be honest. The guys who are sports agents and women now, what they need to do is, number one, you got to learn to get a client.
Yes.
And two, keep one.
Yep.
That's all it takes. The law part, you can hire a lawyer.
Yes.
But the guys who are and women are successful agents, they know how to get clients and keep them. And I saw things the way that you did from the very beginning of my career. I said, how am I going to make a lot of money? I actually reversed engineered Tulane Law School because all I wanted to do is make a lot of money. And I said, wow, what job pays the most out of law school? Oil and gas litigator. Who has the best oil and gas school in the country? Tulane.
Yeah.
And that's why I went there.
Right.
And then I took the job in the internet because it paid more than being a real lawyer.
Right.
Through that process, though, you have to be qualified.
Right.
And so now it's one thing to get the job, but you really don't have the particular background, which creates resistance for some people. They won't go for it because, like, I'm not prepared.
Agreed.
Why did you feel qualified or confident that you could do it?
Well, I think, first of all, from the age of 4, I was raised with this. I was sort of weaponized in psychological expertise, right? I would broadly say, even at a school like Occidental, I had, you know, like a 45 IQ relative to other people. But Occidental valued traditional elements like grit and courage and toughness and grind, right? So I recognize what might take Dave 30 minutes school-wise would take me 4 hours. And I didn't judge it. And I wasn't mad that it didn't take me 30, and I accepted that it took me 4 hours. So when I would get to IMG Academy, I knew that was the NFL for me. And I was either going to make it or not make it. And so it was the most crazy educational environment. So I had a really unique understanding of how to communicate, how to help people find that next level. You know, and I had been raised, and I was always the captain's award, and I was always most inspirational. And I was always, I was a good soccer player at Occidental and in the SCIAC, but you know, basketball, I was just a hustler and played defense and whatnot. So I think the skill set was there. The opportunity was what I was waiting for, and then you're entering a field that 19 years later still is not a field, right? So there is no Tony Robbins in sports.
Yeah.
Are there some jobs? Yes, but who really has relevance? And I think what you were seeking, what I was seeking, was relevance, right? The SEAL community always talks about, you're a SEAL, but are you relevant, right? So I wanted to be, I wanted to get to Bradenton, but I wanted to be relevant. So the first step was learn how to do the job. So I had under 15 girls, under 15 boys, under 18 girls, under 18 boys, you know, and I had the soccer academy and the baseball academy. I didn't have Russell Wilson. I didn't have any of those people. But my mindset was be good where you're at. You know, Frosty Westering, the coach at Pacific Lutheran University, said, make the big time where you are. And I think for me that was really critical. And because you can't wait to be good so you can do an NFL team. You know, ultimately, I would be good in that level. I would move up in Bradenton. You could have 100 kids from Venezuela for an hour. Okay, then you could have 150 soccer players from California the next hour. Then you could have 8 professional young tennis players, Sharapova, Vitasova, all those at the next point. Then you have 16 baseball players that are in the minor league. 16. I mean, the variance was all over, and everybody's problems were relative. So that 14-year-old soccer player, they felt the problems the same way that that professional baseball player would, or 20 CEOs from Sony. So you had all these different skill sets, and then you had a very unique hypercritical population. So once I got to Bradenton, it was social Darwinism.
Yeah.
And I knew I was in a field that wasn't a field, but I also knew that I had a value proposition that could be useful. And that started me down the road. And then, we had Tom Condon and Ken Kramer.
Yeah.
And I was able to build relevance with them first by picking up guys at the airport and then teaching them how to take the Wonderlic. And then once I saw there, then I said, I think I could also help them run faster, just in terms of their mental approach and the night before and different types of things. And they let us do that because we'd done a good job with the Wonderlic. And my business partner at the time was Chad Bowling, who's now the director of sports psychology, mental conditioning for the Yankees and the Cowboys. So we're like one of maybe 5 or 6 people that have this type of job, but it all started at 25, 26, just hustling, picking up people at the airport. Nobody wanted to sit in an office, right? So if I had to meet Cam Newton in a Walmart, so be it, right? Yeah. If I had to fly Warren Moon, first class, or find a way to send Jadeveon Clowney a private plane, and that's what it took to get Bus Cook or whatever, I was going to find a way. And I think that's where while I have a mental conditioning background, I would see myself more as an advisor and somebody that can solve problems in a way that helps my clients, get better in the particular area they came to me for help for.
One of the questions I get asked all the time from running Lee Steinberg and exposed to so many different athletes and executives in the sports world like we are, why did I partner with Warren Moon? And I'm very specific about it because his weaknesses are my strengths and my strengths are his weaknesses, and we fit together.
Yeah.
And I really respect his integrity and the other things that he's about. There's a spirit of excellence about Warren that I see in Russell Wilson, for example. What was it with all the people that you had surrounded yourself with, you decided to partner with Russell in your business?
Yeah.
And obviously he's a special person, but what was it about Russell that attracted you to partner with him?
Well, I think in 18 years, you're always going to get opportunities to partner with athletes. And what terrifies you about them is their relevance window so quick.
Yeah.
They're going to make tons of money and have an opportunity, to be ubiquitous relative to people knowing who they are, et cetera. And they're going to have 1 million social media followers to my 8, and to all those things.
I can teach you that more.
But I think, Russell was the living, breathing embodiment of what I had been trained to teach. And when Russell first came to Bradenton, Florida, he was with 36 other guys, and he was with Tannehill and Keekly and Bobby Wagner and all these guys, and he was by no means the guy. Now, his agent, Mark Rogers, and I had a great relationship, and we'd worked on players before, but the first 10 minutes you meet Russell, you're like, this cannot be real.
Right.
And I'm sure in a very similar way when you met Warren, where you're like, this is incredible. And then, but over the course of the 8 weeks, who you are speaks so loudly I can't hear a word you say, right? The world is driven by behavior, not feeling or emotion. The behavior that Russell had in terms of how he wanted to get better, and I had Breeze 11 years earlier, so we just spent a lot of time together. And I'll never forget, after Bradenton, after the pro day, I'm up in Seattle where I'm from, right? I lived in the South half my life, but I'm from Seattle. I meet him at a Red Robin in Seattle. And because I'm visiting my family, and we spent a couple hours, and Matt Flynn had just got $25 million, and he's like, I'm going to beat that guy out. And I was like, come on, bro, that's one step at a time, go from the beat Tavares Jackson out, and then he's like, look, it's got nothing to do with him, it's got everything to do with what I'm willing to do. And, and he had this confidence about his preparation, about Coach Carroll, about the opportunity in front of him, and sure enough, he starts as a rookie. So I think... But it's interesting. You look at Brees and Russell, they're 11 years apart. So there's a lot more Aaron Murray's than Russell Wilson's. And so it fascinates me because no one's ever asked me what I think about Kyler Murray, right? And I'm uniquely prepared to understand what that journey is like for someone 5'11 or under,
yeah,
right? And I would put every odd against him, you know, because I think what Drew and Russell have been able to do, height's a real thing in the NFL. You and I know it. You're much better off looking like Warren or Cam,
yeah,
or Andrew Luck, right? Or you know, any of these people. And how he's been able to do it is incredible. So partnering with him made sense because he was the living embodiment of the maximizing of human potential and a real understanding that we don't have a margin for error, right? So Russell knows his life starts at 5 a.m, football-wise, and ends at 9 p.m. So any life beyond that starts at 9:01 p.m. and ends at 4:59 a.m. And he doesn't judge it. You'll never hear him complain about what they have or what they don't have. And what we call, he's a neutral thinker. He's not fake positive, but he never goes negative.
That's Warren.
He's just, what's the truth?
Yeah.
Right? And if the truth is, yes, this happened, but it could be different, you know, one way or the other, what I do, not how I feel, determines it. So it was a natural business part. I think the second thing strategically is, I don't think I have quite the strategy of efficiency that you have, but learning, Seattle's in a tremendous business community, right? And you got somebody who's talented and capable, who's an entrepreneur, and his older brother was with us the night before the first Super Bowl and works at a huge pharmaceutical company and said, how come we get Dale Carnegie and none of us get what my brother gets? Why don't we get the training he gets? And we started thinking about that. I don't know, you know, because we're not teaching positive thinking. We're not teaching mindfulness. We're not trying to meditate. Those all have value, Dave, but they're complicated.
Yeah.
And athletes thrive in the simplicity. So Russell's built around neutral behavior and this idea that there are no choices. Choice is an illusion. When you set the goal, I want to be one of the best. I want to be one of the best agents. I want to be one of the best presenters. You're the keynote presenter tomorrow. I want to be the best at running a business. I want to be partnered with the best. I want to surround myself with the best. Then now you've limited your choices to a very finite set of behaviors. And there's nothing wrong if you don't do them. But average people become average through average behavior, not average aptitude. And I think Russell has really good aptitude, but I think his behavior is so far ahead of his aptitude that it's pulled his aptitude up to be really successful.
That's phenomenal. Last question. Through all the experiences and people that you've coached, trained, learned from in business and life, have you seen a common thread? Right? Part of the reason I do the playbook,
yeah,
is it's been extraordinary for my career because I really have honed in on this common thread of what it takes to elevate your vibration or your frequency. And I'll talk in the more complex terms of an unconscious competency and things that I have to lower the vibration to explain. But what do you feel are the common threads of those people that can be extraordinary?
I think it's a conscious competency. Or an unconscious competency, where you know when you know that you know. I think it's people that have a really good understanding of what it takes for them to succeed, and then they set a plan on going out to do that. And I think that's what I've seen, a real awareness of what it's going to take for them to be successful, whether that is Tim Cook or Joseph Tsai or Russell Wilson or Dave Meltzer or Warren Moon or Cam Newton or, you know, and I do think aptitude's a part of it. You know, I think the mind is a piece, but in my years around Coach Saban, Coach Smart, Coach Fisher, they're really, really, they have gifts and they have talented and they have grit because you can't just work through everything, right? But the great opportunity is when you have a talent and then you work to maximize it. And so I think success leaves clues, and it can't be coincidence that what Jim Lovell did when the ship blew at 205,000 miles away and Tom Brady at down 28-3 was the same. You know, very neutral. What can I do as opposed to what can I do? Right? And it's the same words, but a different approach. So I think that's kind of what I've seen. And I've been really more blessed, and I'm sure you've said the same thing. I've learned more by far than the people I've been around. I feel the same way at Occidental.
Yeah.
where I was way over indexed. I felt the same way in the sports world and in the business world, and then certainly in the special operations world.
So nice, right? If you're in a room and you're the smartest person in that room, you're in the wrong room.
In the wrong room.
And I've been in the right room my whole life.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Including this one.
Yeah.
You know, it is extraordinary because you talk about the same things I do in different verbiage. So a majesty of calmness. I tell people to go back to center,
yeah,
which is a neutral position.
Exactly.
Right. And it's an extraordinary way to experience a flow that has that conscious, unconscious consciousness.
Right.
That you,
exactly.
It's difficult to explain and motivate others to do. I could talk to you all day and night,
yes,
which is very cool. And we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely.
But just, you know, two Oxy guys that somehow manifested a career. And if you're looking out there to have a career in sports, you
yeah.
don't have to go sell tickets at the Angels games. There's right. many ways to get involved and inspire other people and enjoy. The one thing too, you know, is when you're at that neutral, these guys enjoy it.
Yes. Right?
I'm a 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. guy.
Right.
I don't believe in work. I believe in activity I get paid for, and I want to maximize that.
Yeah.
But people look at me and they'll say, you work all the time. Like, dude, I just enjoy what I'm doing. And
yeah.
my mindset is I'm going to force myself to enjoy it before I'm actually going to execute on it.
Right.
And because then I can do it all day long. It's,
agreed.
It's an illusion, like you said.
Agreed.
And we're living the best illusion.
I'm in my sixth state in 7 days. And two of the places I went were for friends of mine to speak to their sons' high school football teams.
Very cool.
All the way across the country. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, life is about giving and sharing. And so I think I have as much fun talking to high school teams as I'll do being on the road with the Major League Baseball team this week and then going with Georgia Vanderbilt. You know, it's all the same because again, what's our next level and what are we doing to get there?
Gotcha.
So I love the playbook, and I think the goal is wherever I'm at right now, you don't need problems to improve. Your own greatness should be your impetus for improvement.
That is awesome. Trevor Moad with Dave Meltzer, Two Tigers on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.